Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Troy Noons is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today is Dan Lyons.
Hello, everyone. Happy, we are officially going to the Camping Bowl week.
The Camping World Bowl, indeed.
Camping World Bowl, sorry.
The Camping Bowl, which is different from the Camping World Bowl. The Camping Bowl, you just sit outside in a tent.
Yes. I don't know. I think West Virginia would probably beat us in that. Not that there aren't, you know, enough campers upstate, but...
West Virginia is much better at actual camping, one would assume. West Virginia, obviously, a very familiar opponent for Syracuse. We've won 33 of 60 matchups all time, including the last three. You might recall Chandler Jones kind of ending Geno Smith's will to live on numerous occasions in college. We did not contend the Swartzwelder Trophy the last time around in the 2012 Pinstripe Bowl. Unfortunately, that will be the case once again here. John Wildhack said it wouldn't happen. I feel like the Camping World Bowl people are also kind of part of that, even if it has been publicly made to be the case, since it seems just they don't want anything else overshadowing it. And from a brand perspective, I get it. From a what college football is actually about perspective, considering how little we have in terms of like football rivalries. We only have one official trophy game, the other one being the Orange Eagle Trophy, which is lying somewhere in a closet in Chicago at Sean's house. I think that it does us a disservice, and West Virginia too, to be honest, to just leave the trophy at home for this one.
Yeah, like I get the argument, like I get the where the argument comes from. I just don't necessarily think it would actually overshadow. Like, I couldn't tell you what the Camping World Bowl trophy looks like off the top of my head. I couldn't tell you what any specific bowl trophy aside from the Orange Bowl, I think. Does the Idaho Potato Bowl have a bowl of potatoes? I assume it does.
Probably.
It should if it doesn't. But, like, bowl trophies are not a huge thing. College bowl rivalry trophies are a huge thing. Obviously, the Swartzwelder Trophy isn't the biggest one of them, but it is one that we, you know, we know the deal with it. We know it's
has a reason for it. It's not like Clemson and BC's stupid rivalry trophy.
Or half of the Big Ten trophies. Not that I don't enjoy the we stuck a bunch of stuff on some wood trophy between Penn State and Michigan State. Yeah, no, it's a trophy with, like, meaning behind it and some history and, like, some recent history, some big games. Obviously, we won, what, two or three in a row now in that series?
Three in a row.
Yeah. So, yeah, I wish they would be contesting it. And I'm saying this, like, fully realizing there's a chance that they go out and beat us. I still think that's what college football rivalries are all about, even ones that are dormant and even ones that aren't, like, you know, the first rivalry you think of, even when you think of the old Big East. So I wish they were putting it on up for grabs, but obviously it didn't happen last time. I didn't really expect it to happen this time. So hopefully in the future we'll have a reason to put the Swartzwelder on the line.
I would agree. Although you look at West Virginia's schedule, and I mentioned this in the article about the trophy today, Monday for those listening, it gets kind of tough. West Virginia usually faces Marshall in non-conference play. They would probably rather face Pitt or Virginia Tech or potentially Penn State or Maryland instead of us. And then you're not going to want to stack your entire non-conference schedule, so you'll probably play an FCS team with that last slot. So it doesn't leave a lot of room for Syracuse and West Virginia to play in non-conference. Personally, I'd rather face them every year in non-conference play. I know that's impossible, but it's more of a pipe dream. I know that's kind of spits in the face of the don't schedule tough mantra, but I also think there is some value to playing rivals. And the one, like, near-term rival that we don't play on a regular basis at this point would be West Virginia. I'm not counting Penn State because it really wasn't the rivalry, at least at the later stages.
Once they joined the Big Ten, it stopped being, like, an annual thing.
And even at the end of the 80s, like, aside from 87 and Syracuse's, you know, big jump up into kind of, like, the top 3-4 range there after going unbeaten, like, Penn State pretty much dominated us for much of the 80s, too. So I wouldn't necessarily put that rivalry at all on the same level as some of these other ones, especially, you know, given the last three decades.
Yeah, and West Virginia, looking at their future schedules now, the earliest we could probably get them is 2026. And, like, they really load up, especially considering the 9-game Big 12 schedule. Cause next year they have Mizzou and NC State. The year after, they have FSU and Maryland. They have Maryland and Va Tech. They have Pitt Va Tech in 2022. Penn State, Pitt in 23, Penn State, Pitt in 24, and they have Pitt and ECU 25, 26, respectively. So the first time they don't have two Power 5 opponents is 2026, so they're really going for it with these schedules, which, you know, obviously it's not what I hope we do. West Virginia's in a little bit of a different spot in terms of where their program has been. If you could guarantee that we're winning 9 games in the ACC on a regular basis, maybe I'd become a little more open to scheduling like West Virginia has been, because then you're like, you have higher goals than just getting to bowls.
Right.
But that being said, it makes it very unlikely that we see them before, you know, in any time soon. And 2026, like, I don't think we have anything set for then yet, but that would be like the first time we could play them in non-conference, I think.
Yeah, and maybe it happens for all we know. Or maybe there are seismic changes in college football that blow this entire
Oh, we have Notre Dame that year, so maybe not.
Although we decided to stack Notre Dame and Purdue on one another.
That's true.
For some reason. Speaking of West Virginia and just West Virginia fans, Ears fans are not happy about this matchup. I know a bunch of them think that they deserve something better. I don't really see how or why. Based on where they finished, based on how they closed out the season, kind of in lesser form than how they looked at the start, it was pretty much between the Alamo Bowl and this game. And either you were going to face Washington State or you were going to face us. I don't necessarily think there's much of a huge difference between, you know, the seasons that Washington State and Syracuse respectively had. Washington State obviously looked very good for much of it. They had one loss going into championship weekend. Rivalry weekend. Lost to Washington in a snowstorm. And so they didn't get to play for the Pac-12 title and didn't win the Pac-12 title. So us and Washington State are fairly even ground. They finished, you know, several spots ahead of us in the polls, but we were still in the same general range. I'm a West Virginia fan. I don't know why I'm that broken up about playing in this game versus the Alamo Bowl, and especially if you have a chance to face a rival and a regional foe and a recruiting rival that still for fans over a certain age, that age being probably like 27, still has plenty of value for.
Yeah, I guess like West Virginia feels about getting passed up for the Alamo Bowl kind of like we feel about how we would have felt if NC State had been passed up or had passed us up for this bowl,
right?
Because they had the head-to-head win over Texas. They had what? They finished with the same number. No, they were one win behind Texas, but also one loss. So like they were right in the same range. NC State didn't finish the season ranked even with that ninth win. We beat them head-to-head. It's like kind of a similar thing. Texas has a few more things going for it in that head-to-head rivalry, especially the fact that they're a much bigger brand than West Virginia. No offense to the Niners, than NC State is to us. And we had a pretty definitive head-to-head win and the same amount of wins and a higher ranking. So I get it from that perspective. But as a whole, like West Virginia, they're not too good for this bowl. Bowl has like a pretty good history. This is the former Champ Sports Bowl. It's the former Russell Athletic Bowl, for those who don't know what the deal is with, you know, have all these changing sponsorships. The best argument, I think, is that West Virginia has played in this bowl like a decent amount. They've played four times. They've lost it four times, which I looked into today. but, like, it's not like they're there every year. It's a Florida trip. It's probably good for recruiting.
For them, it's probably great for recruiting because they don't play in Florida.
Yeah, they're recruiting Florida much more than Texas, as far as I can remember. And then I don't think they've ever played the Alamo Bowl, which is like a thing. They have not played the Alamo Bowl. So I get that. I get, like, oh, it would have been cool, but it's not some giant disrespect.
No, not at all.
And it wouldn't have been, like, some giant disrespect if we had drawn a pinstripe. It's just a bad, you know, shook out poorly for us if that had been the case, and we ended up, you know, lucking out. And it kind of seems like, based on everything, it kind of feels like the Alamo Bowl did us a favor, or did the Camping World Bowl a favor. I don't really know how they came to choosing Iowa State first, but I'm not going to complain about it. I think this is a much more attractive matchup for us. I don't love that West Virginia is acting like they're like some, you know, giant program that is now slumming it by playing a 9-win Syracuse team when Syracuse was very much its equal in the end of the Big East. And
they did this since 2012 too.
Did they? I don't remember well enough.
Yeah, they did this in 2012 too, when they started like 5 or 6-0, and then they finished 7-5 because Geno Smith wasn't as good as they thought.
That one also I get, like, at least a little bit because they had just left our conference. So it's like, okay, this is like a kind of a – it's not that we're a boring opponent, but, like, this is – we just played this team every year. So I get that. We haven't played West Virginia since then, so it's been a while. And, like, when you're in bowl games every year, you see – I mean, as we know with Kansas State and company, you know, you end up playing, like, the same group of bowl teams, assuming that you don't fluctuate A, you don't change conferences, and B, you don't fluctuate like your standing in the world a lot.
Right.
You end up playing with the same group of teams. Like, how many times have we seen Michigan and Florida play? All the time. They play so many bowl games. Pitt played in the Birmingham Bowl 3 times in a row. so, like, you get stuck in these, like, if you're in the same types of bowls, you're going to be in the same rotation and you're going to be seeing similar opponents. It just is what it is. This is the second time we played West Virginia in a bowl game. I don't think it's that crazy. So, yeah, their response has been a little strange. It's been, so overwhelmingly annoyed. It's strange. I get, like, some initial annoyance, and then you're like, okay, well, it's just excited for this. But there's that. There's, like, Will Greer maybe not playing, which takes a little bit of the shine off the game. But overall, like, I'm not that concerned about West Virginia fans being, you know, bummed about it because I... You know, if there's an enthusiasm gap and they want to go and lose this game by 20 points again, then I'm fine with that.
Yeah, same. If Greer, I mean, I at this point, I don't really care if Greer plays. I don't really like. I want it to be a good game, but I'd also much rather Syracuse just lays waste to West Virginia's terrible defense and wins the 10th game, gets to put that on the mantle, gets to take a Champion World Bowl trophy home. Gets to, I mean, Dino Babers said it yesterday during the press conference, kind of, well, media remarks, whatever they were, about being selected for the game and talking about how Syracuse, you know, has elevated its standing with current recruits and future recruits and really gotten itself involved in greater conversations. You've seen, you know, as November hit, that SU really turned the corner on a bunch of top guys and could end up getting a couple more to sign on for 2019. Like, this is very much like a huge game for Syracuse, and a close loss isn't going to hurt us. A close win won't either. If we completely blow out West Virginia, it doesn't matter who's under center. That's going to really speak volumes for the program, and it's going to make sure that, you know, this is not just some flash in the pan, that this is at least a 2-year run for the Orange being, you know, hyper relevant. I know last week we talked about the 2019 schedule and how manageable it is. And I still think that would be true no matter what. But, you know, this kind of puts others on notice that, you know, the Orange are probably going to be ranked in top 25 going into next year. They're going to have some hype and conversation around them, and it should be a bit of a turning point for the program.
Yeah, like, to not get, like, too ridiculous, like, we've talked about 2019 a bunch, especially since we, like, it became very obvious we were going to be pretty good this year, like, midway through the season. But 2019... like Liberty, they'll have a new coach. Hopefully it's not Art Briles, but oof. I don't put anything past that school. Go back to the episode when we scheduled them. We were not thrilled, not because it's not like it makes sense based on like level of opponent. It's such a disgusting school. Like, honestly, everything they've done with their football program is gross. Maryland, if that's a perfectly logical non-conference Power Five to play, and we're on the road there, but they'll be breaking in a new coach. Possibly Mike Loxley, who it sounds like is the favorite and was also a horrendous, horrendous coach at New Mexico, but recruits really well, but that won't really take effect until, you know, a year or two down the line. Maybe it'll be Matt Canada, who did a nice job there, all things considered, this year. Western Michigan, we could bring back. We handled them this year. I think it'll be fine at the Dome. Holy Cross, obviously, FCS. And then ACC, we're at Duke, which should be winnable. Like, Duke's usually pretty good, but that's not a huge home field. We're at Florida State, which I think will still be kind of finding itself. At Louisville, which will have a new coach. At NC State, which is probably the hardest of those four on paper right now, not counting out the Florida State talent gap. At NC State, will have a new quarterback. So none of those games are like outright losable. And then you have BC, who will look probably like BC always does. And then Pitt, Wake Forest, both beatable opponents. And then Clemson at the Dome, which we won there last year. We played them tough this year. So, like, obviously, I don't expect this team to go undefeated or anything, but, like, if we take the next step forward and DeVito plays like we saw in spurts and we expect him to develop and the defense keeps on taking a step forward, like, you could reasonably look at this team and say, hey, this should be another 9-10 win team. Maybe you sneak an Orange Bowl if Clemson goes to the playoff again or something.
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously the big frustration for some Syracuse fans this year. I totally get it. But, you know, it happens. Just the way that everything's shaken out is that Syracuse was going, or any ACC team, was going to struggle to get into that top 12, to get into one of those big games without being in the top 12, slash it was going to be absolutely impossible. It's not that we timed things poorly, it's just that things shook out poorly. Still, Camp World Bowl's great. It's one of the better non, you know, like New Year's Six games. There's a lot to like about the matchup. There's a lot to like about having a big stage on a Friday, you know, on ESPN. I'm not going to complain about the situation, and you know, based on, you know, what would have happened if we were in a different year. Like, if we're really that good and this is really going to be some kind of, like, lasting impact for the program, let's do something similar next year. Clemson's probably going to be a playoff team again. Notre Dame could very well be as well. That puts us in prime position to be, you know, a potential Orange Bowl squad. And really, like, if we'd just taken care of business against Clemson or Pitt this year, like, we would have been in the Orange Bowl anyway. So, like, we're not that far off. I know it's frustrating, but this is fine. And winning against West Virginia will be even more fun, hopefully.
Again, it's hard to complain. We won 9 games. We're going to a very nice bowl. Again, this is the Russell Athletic Bowl. This is the Champs Sports Bowl. So this is like a name bowl people know from, you know, just changes sponsorships every like 5 to 8 years. So that's like another reason I think that there's been like a little bit of downgrade in terms of like, obviously there's excitement versus the Pinstripe Bowl, but like, I do honestly think people forget that this is a bowl that is like pretty high up on the bowl schedule every single year. It's one that you know. It's one that you, a couple years ago, it was like Clemson, Oklahoma, I think. There are big matchups in this game. So this was a very good get for Syracuse. And I am very happy, aside from the fact that flights to Orlando are extremely expensive.
Yeah. I mean, that's obviously very problematic for fans. I know it seems like some of the Syracuse travel packages aren't exactly advantageous from a like price standpoint, but I haven't really looked into them myself. I won't be able to go this year, unfortunately. But like one team we haven't brought up yet in terms of, you know, things related to this game is thanking Iowa State for not tripping and falling against Drake, which they almost did, and solidifying the fact that they would be in the Alamo Bowl. Because if Iowa State had lost, it would seem fairly likely that Alamo Bowl would not have been okay with passing up West Virginia. One would assume. It doesn't mean that we wouldn't have faced Iowa State in the Camping World Bowl instead, but I'm sure having West Virginia there did help.
Yeah, that whole thing, I want to see someone report on how they made that choice, because I would have thought, obviously, Iowa State's a little closer to the Alamo Bowl than West Virginia is,
right.
But I think, I mean, it seems pretty clear that West Virginia wanted the Alamo Bowl, and their complaints, you know, how it affects us aside, like, you would think that the West Virginia contingent would have been, if not a little stronger, at least, like, more enthusiastic about going there. And it's not like they're super close to Camping World either. They're closer. But I do wonder, because, like, West Virginia seemed like pretty clearly a higher-level team than Iowa State this year, even though Iowa State's pretty good. But I do wonder how they came to that decision, because it was very surprising. Because, like, up in the morning, Sunday morning, like, we all thought we were going Pinstripe.
Yeah.
And we all thought West Virginia was going Camping World, or going Alamo.
I think part of it's based on, you know, certain reporting, opinions as facts and facts as opinions. And I think that there was probably a decent, I think there was actually a decent lead that said that how that was going to shake out. And I do think that it was probably some arrangement with the Big 12, Camping World, and the Alamo Bowl to kind of make this thing work out for everybody. Something that is, I mean, when I was talking to Chris Carlson from Syracuse.com a little bit, something that is in the contracts for a lot of these games is head-to-head as part of a long list of criteria. And for those that forgot, Iowa State upset West Virginia earlier this year to give the Ears their first loss of the season, 30-14, Iowa State won. So if we were looking for one reason why they might have been able to jump over them, it could have been that.
That's the point. I kind of forgot about that. Although, if you're looking for, like, oh, you can stop West Virginia's offense model, that Iowa State game was like a buzzsaw. Like, Will Breer couldn't do anything in that game, which was bizarre.
Iowa State in general is, I really like them under Matt Campbell. They're not, like, super fun, necessarily. I think it's just that they're unique. They have a novelty factor to them, obviously. But they play sound defense. They run the ball well. I mean, they seem to be able to do what's needed in the passing game to get wins. I'm much happier to be facing West Virginia than I am to be facing Iowa State. And I'm sure other Syracuse fans will probably agree if they were paying attention to the Cyclones at all this year or last year.
Yeah, I feel like last year was the fun, the more fun Iowa State team, and they also came kind of out of nowhere. But this year, they like kind of. I feel like they're a bit more fundamentally sound. They're not that much better. They're just like, they're more of like your standard good team, versus last year they really snuck up on people. I think, you know, maybe next year is our 2018 Iowa State season, although I do hope we finish a little higher, because they had a really weird start to the season.
Yeah, they very much did. I would hope that, based on our schedule, that we don't have this similarly weird start to the season. As we mentioned, Syracuse has a golden opportunity to finish really, really well yet again, be ranked once again. So I'm excited about that. One other game I wanted to talk about as we were talking football a little bit here. Tulane made a bowl. And Tulane will also be playing in Orlando. So, Dan, I hope you found somewhere to stay for 2 weeks. Because Tulane's facing UL Lafayette on December 15th.
Flights down for the Cure Bowl are probably a lot cheaper than they are the week after Thanksgiving or Christmas.
It's the same stadium.
Yeah. Same stadium. It's unfortunate that they couldn't just swap this and the New Orleans Bowl this year? App State, Middle Tennessee. I think the bowl tie-ins made that like kind of the auto bid for App State, but like it would have made a lot more sense for Tulane and Lafayette to be playing in New Orleans and App State, Middle Tennessee to go down to Orlando. That being said, I do think it's an interesting matchup for Tulane. Little Lafayette's always like fairly fun. I think this might be the name of the two best uses of logos.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Wave Chappelle, the fighting, angry, probably inebriated Wave, against the one of my favorite uses of punctuation ever, the apostrophe that's a red hot jalapeno pepper, or I think it's probably habanero, which is just great. The UL Lafayette pepper gets me every time. Yeah, that should be fun. I mean, I love all these games. I always rail against everyone who's like, oh, there are too many bowls. There are not too many bowls, because why wouldn't you want to watch like a random Sunbelt versus TUSA like 100-point game on a Tuesday night in the winter when you're not doing anything? Like, come on.
Yeah, I would agree. All the bowls are fine. Shut up. And especially the ones that like when your team's like 6-6 and they're like, I don't care if we go to a bowl or not. Like, well, the players do. Your fans do. Your recruits definitely do. So why not just take the trip? I mean, no, you're not dying to go to St. Pete's or Fort Worth or Charlotte or Shreveport, Louisiana. But at the same time, like, you know, for some of these kids, it's the only chance they get to go to the postseason while they're in college. For others, maybe not. Nonetheless, you get the 15 extra practices. You get the national exposure. You get to tell recruits that you've been to the postseason, get the chance to play in a bowl. All the kids, even though college athletes don't get paid, even though they should, they do get...
This is the closest thing they get. Yeah. They get a trip and like a swag bag worth like $2,000.
Yeah, which is great. They get Xboxes and all kinds of other nonsense. So like this just seems to me like a perfect way to like let the kids enjoy it a little bit, and let them, you know, get something out of this arrangement for once, other than just some school and some time on TV. I think it's a no-brainer to just let kids play in the bowls. And again, like, do you like football? Do you like seeing your team play football? Just accept the extra game. And if your team didn't make it this year, then hopefully they do next year.
Yeah, I think the one thing I would change about would be maybe siphoning some of the bowls away from the Sun Belt and to some other more varied, maybe more interesting locations. Like, not that I don't, not I get, like, that's the heart of college football down there. I don't know that we need a bowl in Mobile and, you know, Birmingham and Shreveport. Like, I think we could probably use more bowls in, like, I love the idea. I know people complain about winter bowls. I know the Pinstripe Bowl people complain about it, even though it's fun every single year. But, like, the Wrigley Field Bowl I thought was awesome. I thought it was a great idea. Like, just varying up the locales a bit and giving some different experiences. Just, like, right now there's, like, this host of middling bowl games that are all, like, in the same area of the world. There's, like, 18 bowl games in Orlando.
That's why I'm fine with the Bahamas Bowl and stuff.
Bahamas Bowl is so good. It's so fun every year. The first one was amazing.
Yeah, like stuff like that, like the...
The Sun Bowl. I know we didn't really want to go to it this year because it's like impossible for us to get to, so now it'll just be impossible for Pitt to get to. But the Sun Bowl, it's like, cool, there's a bowl in El Paso. I appreciate that because it's different. It's like a unique city. Spread it out a little bit more. Like, there's a lot to like here. I think Vegas will probably get an extra bowl with the new stadium.
Vegas will get a bowl. I think the new L.A. stadium could potentially get a bowl. They might actually move the Holiday Bowl there just because of this current state of things in San Diego.
Which is kind of a shame because I like the Holiday Bowl, but they're just everything's a mess down there.
We'll just move the Holiday Bowl to L.A. and it's basically the same thing. It's just It'll just be more traffic. And really, anyone who, I mean, it used to be, what used to be Qualcomm is now San Diego County Credit Union Stadium. Anyone who's ever gone in or out of that stadium for a San Diego State or a Chargers game, holy crap. Like, it makes traffic in and out of any other stadium look great. You don't want the game to stay there, to be honest. The Holiday Bowl can move to L.A. and Inglewood. There's like 17 freeways that intersect right there. You'll be fine.
Yeah, I bet we'll probably get like a Fenway Bowl at some point. Just as a Pinstripe Bowl, I think, has been like a pretty big success overall. Like, obviously, you know, attendance fluctuates, but that's every bowl game. Like, if you look at the Camping World attendances, it's some years it's 60,000, some years it's like 20,000. I don't think that's like the biggest deal, honestly. It's part of the equation, but like, this is all TV revenue, and people are watching these games no matter what.
Yeah, I think Boston, New York, Chicago are much better plays than like, you know, the former San Francisco Bowl, now Red Box Bowl.
That's so far from everything.
Well, originally when it was in AT&T Park, where the Giants play, like, it was just bad. Like, San Francisco doesn't have this like hub of like transplants the way that like LA and Chicago and New York do. Like,
it might not have the right transplants either.
Yeah, it's
all tech, and not that there aren't, like, obviously I'm not going to generalize. I know plenty of tech people who like college football. It's probably not the biggest correlation compared to like even like entertainment or it's, you know, anything else.
I mean, it's a lot of Pac-12 folks, so like that's fine for one piece of the puzzle. But then like you're never going to get enough Big Ten folks or any other school there. And yeah, at a baseball stadium that like is notoriously cold during baseball season, like in the middle of summer and you're wearing two jackets, like I one would assume that showing up in December at a ballpark with an open back facing the bay is probably not going to be an enjoyable experience for anybody.
Yeah. So overall, like, if you like the bowl system, I think there are things you can do to fix it. I also don't think that expanding the playoff hurts it that much because you just integrate it in. The only thing it does, it bumps, at this point it would bump like a couple more teams out, but you also we're probably going to have more bowls because there's always more bowls. There's one popping up in Myrtle Beach, which I am kind of a fan of because there isn't one there. There's not really, the only bowl in the Carolinas is the Belk Bowl. So like throw one in Myrtle Beach. Why not? There's always expansion, and the argument that the playoff hurts the bowl season, I think, is kind of ridiculous because it's just part of it now.
Yeah, that's where shit. Everyone shut up. I think we're about at halftime, Dan. If you want to talk a little bit about beer.
Yeah. So I've had a couple of new things. Earlier I actually got to try one of the newest Game of Thrones Omegang beers, the Mother of Dragons, which was a really interesting, kind of like a tart brown ale. I forget exactly how they described it. It had an interesting German name, I believe, in terms of like the style. But really nice, like kind of fruity, but not overpowering flavor, and like dark, kind of had like a creek thing going on, kind of smoky, really interesting blend. So I enjoyed that. They always do interesting stuff with those Game of Thrones themed beers. I had a couple of Heaven Hell or Hoboken from 902 Brewing, which is in Hoboken apparently. I had not heard of them before, but I was in Jersey City and saw them and had to try it, and it was a really solid IPA. I would definitely drink it again. I had, since we last spoke, some Zinger beer by Rushing Duck, which is a German sour, or not ginger, a ginger sour, which is exactly what it sounds like. Kind of has like a little bit of like a ginger beer flavor, but not crazy, and then a sour finish. Really enjoyed it more than I thought I would. And I had some Oktoberfest from Sierra Nevada. I had a Be Enlightened from Half Full in my hometown, which was a beer made with locally farmed honey, which was interesting. Some interesting stuff for sure.
Nice. I didn't have too much this past weekend. Got a six pack of Stone's Tropic of Thunder. Their India Pale Lager, which was super good. Had City of the Sun IPA from Modern Times down in San Diego. Grabbed Deschutes Jubilee Ale, their winter ale that they produce every year. And also had from Offshoot Beer, which is under the brewery label, Relaxed, just a hazy IPA, which is one of the kind of better regularly available hazy IPAs that you don't have to wait in line for or deal with any sort of release day hassle or anything. It's it's easily discoverable in stores. So he said nothing too crazy, but a couple good things.
Cool. I know this should be with all the holidays. I'm sure there'll be a lot of releases. I saw someone had a Christmas ale out that I almost tried tonight, but I will probably go back and get it at some point. I forgot what it was, but I always do enjoy like the various winter, the warmers and all the other unique styles that we see now.
Yeah, I know one of my favorites that doesn't get out here, Great Lakes. Is it their Christmas ale or is it? Yeah, I think it's their Christmas ale. It's super good. And then I know I always get a Sierra Nevada Celebration. Their like Christmas IPA that's super good.
Yeah, Celebration's great. I remember, I think the first time I had it, I bought a six pack as a pretty naive, I think I was a senior at Syracuse, and decided I was going to drink that to pregame a football game. And guess what? That's way too heavy a beer to do that with.
It is.
Even as at 21, that is not what you want to pregame a football game with. That is where you stick to your more drinkable IPAs. But it's very nice to have one or two of. I'll probably pick up a sits or that at some point. Celebration's great.
Yeah, I'll definitely have some soon myself. Maybe even before Syracuse's next football game. Who knows? But redirecting a little bit, Syracuse basketball has continued its season, and it's actually looking pretty good right now. I mean, there are some thoughts, and we can share those. But Syracuse won three straight now. They've won two straight since we last spoke. They beat Ohio State on the road. A pretty nice win, and as I mentioned in a blog post last week, their first road win against a ranked team outside of ACC play since 2008 against Memphis. They beat the Buckeyes. The Orange defense really deserves a ton of credit. I know that we shot better, but Orange defense deserves a ton of credit in that game in particular for forcing bad shots and making a bad team take a lot of terrible opportunities. A lot of mid-range shots, a lot of bad threes. It was nice to beat the Buckeyes. We then proceeded to get lit up for like three quarters of a game against Cornell, who just decided to get red hot from three. And we know how that goes occasionally, but luckily Ty's battle kind of took over at the end and averted what would have been... I mean, this Cornell team's not terrible, but I would argue it would probably be one of the worst losses of the last like 10 to 15 years under Jim Boeheim.
Yeah, I mean, Matt Morgan, their star guard, deserves a lot of credit. For once, it wasn't like the random guy off the bench that lit us up. It was their best player.
The guy we knew was super good.
Yeah, the guy who we knew was super good, who they talked about every time he touched the ball, was good. Jim Boeheim was probably nodding in approval of his 40-minute, 26-point, 9-for-14 stat line, kind of evocative of Tyus Battle of yesteryear. Tyus Battle was really slacking in this game, only played 36 minutes. But he was 10 for 17 for 26 points, knocked down four of six from three. Once again, I thought, obviously in the Ohio State game, like we shot super, super well. I think we were 48% from three. Yeah. So that's not sustainable. But, or no, we were 45. We were 40, just under 46% from three, 11 for 24. So that's not sustainable numbers wise for this team. But none of the, like that, watching that game, it didn't look like we were just lighting the nets on fire. Like, you know, sometimes a team that shoots above its head does. They were, you know, shots in rhythm. The ball movement was a lot better, even if Frank Howard's numbers haven't been great so far this year since he came back. Like, the offense just runs a lot better with him. But you saw, like, oh, this team can hit some shots. And then the Cornell game, I thought, while it was very ugly, I thought, like, we thought shot 38% from three. And honestly, if this team does that every game, shoots, like, 38%, like, it's in a win, most of them. Because the defense is starting to tumble on. They made big stops down the stretch when they needed to. They contained pretty much everyone else on that team except for Morgan. Jimmy Boeheim was the second leading scorer off the bench with 9 points. Unfortunately, the offense, like Elijah Hughes, was terrible and just didn't really look for a shot at all. He only took three shots total at 4 points. It was basically all Battle and Brissett. Howard still finding himself, did not shoot well, but still I think there's a big difference with him on the court. So it was ugly for a lot of it. It would have been a pretty bad loss, but, you know, no one's going to remember the ugly 8-point win over Cornell in a year, so I'm not super worried about it. The Ohio State win, I think, tells us a lot more. So I think we're getting on track. It's not there yet. We're not consistent enough on offense yet, but I think the defense has looked a lot better, and that's very encouraging because the defense was very rough in the first week or two of the season.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this before. I think it's just, once again, very, very obvious just how much the Frank haters in recent years oversold their position, and now we saw what this team looked like without him. Obviously, the first game is Eastern Washington. Defense looked great. Only let up 34 points. But, you know, in the next few games without him, allowed 70, allowed 83, allowed 80. Frank comes back, and you see this defense really return to form. And the offense is able to be a hell of a lot more efficient. We're not scoring, like, in droves necessarily, but we do look a lot better. The ball is moving around more. We're still probably pretty low in the assist percentage conversation, but, you know, look at the difference in Tyus Battle's game between the early part of the season and, you know, the last three in particular. Combined for 70 points in the last three games, he's been incredibly efficient. Just played better on both ends of the floor. He's been very clutch. I mean, you don't win that game against Cornell without Battle, just because of how poorly everyone else was shooting. But, like, Frank's presence alone on the floor just makes him such a better player. And he's starting to do, you know, he's playing clutch basketball, but he's not playing hero ball, and he's doing a lot of those things in the margins that I think we didn't see in the first few games. And NBA scouts probably had some thoughts for him going into the draft process last year that he needed to correct, and I think he's actually done a great job of addressing them. And a lot of players don't necessarily do that when they come back after testing those waters.
Yeah, Battle's just been like another. Like, obviously, we noted pretty well how his struggles early on. In the three Frank games, he is 24 for 36 from the field, or 37, I think, from the field. He is 8 for 11 from three. His free throws have actually been like a little bit underwhelming, but I'm not worried about that. But overall, like, he's just been super efficient. He's taking good shots. He's hitting a lot of huge shots. Like, he had that one off balance shot from the corner that basically, like, kind of righted the ship for us in the end of the Cornell game when they were going on that late run. So I think I tweeted, like, it's a little, like, the only bad part of Tyus, like, hitting all these big shots is that they're big shots in November and early December, which is not usually what we have to rely on, but you'll take it. So I think we are starting to get the battle that we thought we were going to get with his return here, where, like, obviously he's going to play a lot of minutes and he's going to take a lot of shots, but there's going to be an increase in efficiency and less of a reliance on him. And obviously in the Cornell game, that wasn't really the case because Hughes kind of disappeared and Howard's still working his way back and Jalen Terry's still, like, kind of a work in progress in these big spots. But overall, like, the Ohio State game, I thought, was a better representation of hopefully what we'll see going forward, where he was at 18 points and looked really good. You know, Marex had probably his biggest impact so far. Hit some, I think he hit two threes in that game, which was jarring and exciting.
His range has extended a ton, which is a really, really, really good sign for this team going forward.
Yeah, and he doesn't need to be Lauri Markkanen. Like, he doesn't have to, like, hit 40% or anything. But the fact that you have to dart him out there, and he's such a good passer, really opens things up. And then when we play zones, when we play Duke later in the year, when we play a couple of these other teams that try to zone us, like, I'm super, and we saw it a little last year, I'm really excited to see what Marek can do from the inside of the zone, because he has the perfect tool set if he's just aggressive enough with it. He is one of the better passers on the team, and he has a really soft mid-range jumper that he can knock down. So he hasn't really exploded yet, but I think he's starting to come along. So there's a good chance that this team has just, like, taken a little bit longer to mesh than we thought, because considering we brought everyone back. But with the Howard injury coming at the point guard position, like, it makes some sense. So, you know, I think we have gone a long way towards quelling some of the concerns, while not just going all the way and saying, oh, Syracuse is back, baby, we're, you know, going to run to the title. We're, like, on the fringes of the top 25 again. I think we'll probably get back in by, you know, next week or two. And then hopefully we come out strong in the early ACC play. We can, you know, make this less of a dramatic selection Sunday.
Yeah, I'm really hoping for that. That would be awesome. On the way to that, I guess first we need to beat a few more teams at least. We'll get to Buffalo at some point in the near future. But the next two opponents, one of them, game will probably be done already by the time you listen to this, depending on how editing goes. But Northeastern, not a pushover by any means. They'll be in the Dome on Tuesday. They're 4-4 on the season. They stomped Bucknell. They stomped Eastern Michigan. They actually beat Alabama by a pretty good amount, 68-52, earlier this season. And they beat Harvard by 10. They've also dropped a weird game to BU, lost to Virginia Tech, which is totally understandable, and then dropped two games to Davidson. I'm not sure why they faced them twice in a row. But anyway, so this is an interesting team. It's one that can score and does score. Again, far from a pushover by any means. I think in general, like, they're another team that can shoot fairly well from three, which should worry us to some extent, if only because we saw what Cornell could do with, I think, maybe less three-point proficiency as a group. Still, they're probably like a one- or two-man team. Jordan Rowland and Vasa Pusica, the two of them are going to be your leading scorers for Northeastern. I think we can handle them because we should have a clear advantage on the boards, hopefully. I think we're probably a better defensive team by a significant amount. It's really just going to be, once again, depending on if we can shoot, you know, over 40% from the floor. I think that goes a long way toward beating what should be a tough but very beatable Northeastern team.
I certainly hope it's a beatable Northeastern team. They're fourth.
I explained why they might not be as bad as 4-4 would indicate.
I understand, but it is still Northeastern. Although I did not know is that Northeastern got a new logo. They kind of went
I saw that.
Not total UConn, like, angry Husky direction, but more of like a
Regal Husky. You
know, Regal, didn't give you a stern talking to Husky?
I really like the N. Let's go back to that.
But what was that?
The N that they used to have. That was just like that, like, that weird, the collegiate, like, black and red N. That was fine.
Yeah, it was like we ripped off Nebraska and then changed to, like, one thing.
Yeah.
I'm okay with the Husky. It's, you know, a little derivative, I think. But what are you going to do? This is where we learn our favorite pastime of breaking down the mascots and logos of undercovered teams. And then we have Georgetown on Saturday.
I was going to get to that. I figured let's talk very briefly about Northeastern, and then we would get to Georgetown. So Northeastern's mascot's name is Paws, which I approve.
Do they make any? They have to have like a million like Paws puns whenever like they have a like a like at every charity is like a cross for Paws, right? Like,
yeah, I would assume so. He
otherwise, what are we doing here?
He was introduced in fall 2003. He replaced Mr. and Mrs. Husky.
That's super lazy. Pause all day.
Yeah, pause all day. Pause is actually really cool looking if you're looking at him. And he also has the old N logo. He's a more athletic and charismatic mascot.
The brand is the tongue. I appreciate the tongue.
They have a live mascot too, King Husky the Eighth. This is much better than Jonathan. F off, UConn.
King Husky looks pretty awesome.
There is like a royal family of Huskies. This is aggressive. They have
Boston. Like, are these like the non-separatist like Boston families that kept Northeastern alive?
This is insane. They had King Husky the First. It was 1927, 1941, then Queen Husky in 1941. After King Husky died, then King Husky the Second took over for Queen Husky since King Husky the Second was King Husky the First's son. King Husky the Third took over until 1955. Then Princess Regent Husky was the temporary mascot as the daughter of King Husky the Third. Then King Husky the Fourth. Then they decided to rename the thing briefly and got away from the king queen dynamic with Aliska Sugin.
Was there like a French Revolution style takeover?
And there was a coup, and King Husky the Fifth took over. Queen Husky the Second then took over for King Husky the Fifth after his death. Then King Husky the Sixth, King Husky the Seventh. Then they stopped having a goddamn Vlad mascot from 1989 to 2004, and then King Husky the Eighth has been at this for like 14 years.
Oh man, is the ninth already born? Like, are they actually keeping this in the family? Because that's some serious dedication. Usually, it's just like another like all the Uggas aren't related.
This is dope, honestly. Like, this is the one. This is like, I mean, there's a lot of places where Syracuse's athletic brand goes wrong. As much as I love the orange. However,
I think we should actually bring out an orange and we keep the same orange until it like actually rots. Becomes fully rot. And then we have Otto the Second, and then it just goes on. So like after like what 1 year, there'll be like we've gone through like 90 live mascots.
I just this is where we're having like a fruit or a color as a mascot. Like, it removes you from the pageantry of like dog royalty. And like goofy nonsense that only happens in college football.
I think we should bring out the Otto, the live orange on like a very fancy royal pillow, and like someone has the task of bringing him out to the field every game.
We put a crown on him.
Yes, kind of like the Citrus Bowl. What mascot is that? Is that the Orange Bowl mascot?
Yeah, Obi.
Yes.
Yeah, Orange Bowl, and then some people actually claim that Obi's a better version of Otto, which is false.
Oh, that's false. Otto is so much more character. Oh. Obi, I'm okay with Obi being around. I'm okay having a weird second orange mascot that people like.
But he's only around once a year.
He's only around once a year, plus when, who is him as his avatar? One of the Matt Browns?
Yes.
Matt Hinton, maybe? One of the eligible ones.
Yeah, I think Matt Hinton.
Matt Hinton, yeah. Has him as his mascot, which, you know, it's fine.
Yeah, go for it. It's still not Otto. No. Anyway, that was our brief foray into Northeastern athletic culture.
Mascot lineage.
Yes. We now move on to Georgetown, who has a trash dog as a mascot, unlike Northeastern, which has a regal dog as a mascot. Georgetown lost.
Georgetown has, like, what, the, like, eighth best live bulldog mascot?
At best.
Yeah, I mean, like, he's no Blue. He's no Ugga. Ugga's the best. The Ugga is every college football fan, except that he has to come to the stadium.
Yale has a better mascot. There's a lot better mascots than Georgetown's Bulldog. Georgetown has once again faced no one, beat no one. Richmond.
Just like step up from last year when they were playing like NIAI
D3 teams. Like. Yeah. Their best wins probably Richmond. No, wait. They beat Illinois. They beat Illinois 88-80. They also lost to LMU. Top 10 net team LMU.
They were. Are they still?
I don't know if they've released another one. They might be, like, tweaking the formula.
They put out one recently because we moved from, like, 118 to, like, 45 or something.
No, back in the lab.
Yeah. I love that they're I think they actually update it every day. I don't know if they would do a release every day.
Yeah.
But they update it, like, every day, but then they don't, like, tell you what it is. So it's just... Yeah, so we are now 45th. We were 44th for a time, but that was too on-brand. So we moved down a spot. Georgetown is not coming up when I search. Oh, 87th.
Data not found. 404 error. Georgetown basketball? Loyola, did you mean trash fire?
Loyola, which was 10th, like, what, a week ago?
Yeah.
Is now 57th. So this is the most reactive.
Oh, good.
Hilariously reactive. Ohio State, I don't even see. Ohio State is down to 20th after being number one and they've only lost one game. Virginia is your new number one. Actually, you know, the top 10 actually looks like reasonable now. Nebraska's a little weird, although I know they are ranked and they're pretty good. Their top 10 now, as of the latest release, which was yesterday, UVA, Gonzaga, Michigan, Duke, Texas Tech, Wisconsin, Auburn, Michigan State, Nebraska, Nevada.
All right.
It's not terrible.
No, that's not terrible. I'll take that, I guess.
Buffalo's number 13. So
reasonable.
They're good, but...
We'll
I don't
see.
Know if they're number 13.
Yeah, maybe not. But, yeah, I mean, Georgetown's not really registering for them, so that means the system works, I guess, a little bit. Yeah, Georgetown, some of the same faces that annoyed us last year. Jesse Gavan is once again very good, at least for Georgetown. He's going to give us some fits. Having a bigger guy on the inside like that who can also shoot from outside is probably going to extend Barama Sidibe and Pascal Chukwu better or just more than they're used to. Foul trouble is going to be a big, big concern in this one. I think we are a better team than the Hoyas, but Georgetown also can score points, and that's always problematic for this recent iteration of the Orange that for some reason cannot.
Yeah, Jovan's really good. He's been a problem for us for a couple of years now. I will say I'm not as concerned in terms of their play style. They shoot 33% from three, but they don't shoot that many as far as I can tell. They only have, four guys that have shot at least 19. Jovan is at that 19 mark. Two of their top four scorers don't shoot threes really at all. So it's not like a huge shooting team. They do have inside presence, which can be troublesome depending on how Chukwu's playing. But like overall, this team is going to kind of attack you near the basket, and I think I'll rather take my chances with that.
Yeah, I think that's fair. The only place that it becomes a problem with the Syracuse team is if Govan understands that Chukwu and Sidibe have no idea how to play without drawing fouls.
Or if we have that Ohio State ref team.
Yeah, or yeah, or we get that refereeing crew, and then it's a nightmare.
Which really united the factions of the Syracuse fan base under the banner of "Screw these refs! This is the worst thing we've ever seen."
Yeah, that put the old Ohio State referee job to shame somehow. I think we could end. I mean, I don't think we will end up with the same group, but we could conceivably, because I think isn't like the Big East, Big Ten, ACC, and like A-10 all under the same referee like crew now.
I know they share some. I know there are like some leagues that won't take certain ones. What's his name? Ted Valentine got bumped out from the Big Ten this year. Oh, yeah. They basically decided he was like not worth the trouble. So I know they share a bunch. I don't know like how often like full crews like that move together.
Well, let's hope never in this case, because that game was hideous.
It was a legit travesty, especially for a game that we won by 10 points. Like, horrendous.
Yeah,
it's weird that we haven't spoken since that game aired, because it feels like it was a while ago now. Literally, like, a game where we won by 10, we probably should have won by 20, and it felt like we lost because of how awful the refereeing was. But our team, you know, credit their resiliency, because, it wouldn't have been that hard to imagine that team just being like, all right, they'd be packing it in because this is absurd. And they didn't. They came out and they made huge shots at the end and they won. So yeah, hopefully that doesn't happen with the Georgetown game, because I could see Jesse Govan, you know, shooting 20 foul shots himself. And that wouldn't be fun.
I just don't want this game going down to the wire again for like the fourth straight year.
Yeah, no. He's only averaging 5 foul shots a game, so that's actually a pretty good sign. He doesn't draw that many.
I mean, we might change that story for him, but I hope we don't.
We could.
Again, please no. All right, before we leave, Dan, what is your prediction for this game against a team without a fan base?
Are we talking Northeastern or Georgetown?
Georgetown.
Legit question with your how you presented it.
Northeastern has fans based on the fact that they have a Husky lineage that somebody maintains.
That's true. Someone demanded that to come back. Like, they were. I mean, I don't think there were like no one shouting into the void when you have a 14-year gap or whatever it was between Royal Huskies. For the Georgetown game, I am going to go, you know, I'll be optimistic because it's worked out fairly well for me recently. I'm going to go 72-57.
All right. I think Georgetown can score more than that, even against us. The offenses look pretty good this year. I think in terms of overall rankings, they're averaging 78.9 points per game, which is pretty good. ESPN's decided that it's not going to tell me what that ranks in terms of the overall national picture. That's fine. I'm going to go Syracuse wins 76-71, and it's going to be much closer than we want it to be. We're still going to win.
Fair enough. I'm not that concerned because they lost to Loyola Marymount, and I know they are a one-time top 10 team, but they lost to Loyola Marymount by 13, and they only scored 52. They didn't exactly light Central Connecticut on fire. They struggled to beat South Florida in overtime. They beat Richmond by 8. They beat Liberty by 10. Like, these are not, like, they beat Campbell by 8. So, I do think their scoring could be benefited by the fact that they are playing pretty mediocre teams, and they're still not blowing them out. So I feel pretty good about it. But it's also Georgetown, and even the most mediocre Georgetown teams, for whatever reason, give us trouble. So,
yeah, I don't really understand it. Luckily, this time around, Georgetown did not get any votes in either poll, which...
the plan didn't work.
The plan didn't work. Last year, it did. They were actually getting votes because, for some reason, people forgot that if you only play D3 teams, those wins don't count.
Yeah, as much as we complain about like, the college football voting, occasionally, like, college basketball is worse. There are people that vote for this thing that just clearly don't know what's happening in the sport.
No, not a thing. Although, props to Furman, the Paladins, for getting themselves in the top 25. I think this is their first trip ever. And
I thought I saw that. And they've had some like okay teams, but I believe you're correct that this is their first ever trip to the top 25. We've played them like pretty recently, right?
Probably. I mean, it's not really that hard for a team in the SoCon to like get into this thing.
So, yeah, I mean, they haven't really played it, but they beat Villanova, which is a win. They beat Loyola Chicago.
True.
They beat the blog
favorite Loyola Chicago Ramblers.
Yeah, now they have 3 overtime wins, 1 Villanova, Gardner-Webb, and double overtime against Western Carolina. So, like, I don't know how long Furman is for the top 25 here, but they're 8-0. Good for them. Like, you know, it's cool. It's always a cool story when a team like that rises up. We saw it with Loyola last year, who we were very early on the bandwagon for.
Super early.
Yeah. Like, I think we talked about them in, like, December last year. Like, oh, they're fun. Let's kind of half follow them for the year. And it worked out. I don't know that we're totally ready to adopt Furman, but we'll see. We might have to do that in maybe next week when we have, like, dead smack in the middle of, you know, bowl layoff for football.
Yeah, I think next week we might have to pick, like, our... Because we were 1-for-3 on the... no, actually, no, 2-for-3, because didn't LIU Brooklyn, like, either make or almost make the NCAAs?
They usually almost make the NCAAs. Yeah, I forgot how they did last year. I don't think they made it. Or maybe they did.
They might have come close. But, yeah, we were very early in on Loyola Chicago. I think we picked them, like, right after they upset Florida. And we were ready to go there. For reference, and...
LIU...
did not?
What did they do? Oh, they won the tournament. Yeah, they snuck a bit.
Ah,
18-17, but they won the NEC tournament.
2-3 for us, because we picked some we picked a West Coast team that was bad.
Yeah, I forget which one. One of the Cal States, maybe.
Yeah, I think it was. Shit. I'll look it up. But yeah, I think we picked one of the Cal States. For further reference, we're not gonna pick Furman just because I feel like everyone's already in on Furman. They're a top 25 team now. We last faced Furman in the NCAA tournament in 1973. And we won 83-82.
For some reason, I thought we had played them in, like, our non-conference, like, while I was there. But I guess I'm wrong.
I mean, Orange Hoop says it's so, and I don't want to doubt Ray, because I don't think he's ever steered me wrong on that side.
No, he's spot on, so I believe him implicitly.
Yeah. So Dan, bring your nominees for Tulane of the basketball season for next week.
Yeah, we did pretty much exclusively low majors, right?
Yes. So, like... anything, like, you couldn't pick from, like, the top 10 conferences or so.
Okay, yeah. I will do my research. Although a lot of this is just based on, like, MassDOT and, like...
almost fun, entirely fun MassDOT. Branding.
It's almost entirely based on that. Like, the Rambler and the Cool Dog were, like, most of the reason we picked UC Chicago. Or Loyola Chicago. I think we might have to pick UDM just for Devo being there.
I have to pick Northeastern just for the fact that they have a lineage of Husky dogs that go back to like the 40s.
Let's see. Let's make sure they don't annoy us on the court first.
That's fair. Yeah, if they beat us, then we can't pick them.
If they beat us, or like they're just fouling the hell out of us, or whatever, we can't pick them. But we'll they have a shot. Like the game doesn't preclude them from being a choice.
They're in the running.
Yes.
Anyway, Dan, anything else before we log off today?
No, very happy with how the bowl went out, worked out. I was like mentally prepping myself, being like, oh, the Pinstripe Bowl won't be that bad. Hopefully we get like Michigan State, it's a named opponent. I'll get to Dota the game pretty easily and host a party before or something. But good for the program to Dota, the Tampa World Bowl, a definite win. We get our rightful place as the number 2 ACC team. So hopefully, you know, I'll see if I can make it down there. It's iffy with the flights, but I will try. And if not, hopefully a lot of people are there in our place and root on the orange and have a good showing and make it look like we're a team that is worth picking for these mid-bowl games, because hopefully this will be a thing that we have a lot of opportunity to do.
Agreed. This has been a fun episode as always. So Dan, thank you. Appreciate it.
Yes, as always. Thank you.
Of course. So that was Dan. I'm John. Thank you everybody for listening to Troy Noon's An Absolute Podcast. You can rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, on Blog Talk, on whatever other service you listen to us on, and go Orange.
Go Orange.